back with episode 799 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights. I heard there was a round number coming up, so I thought I'd pop in again.
And this is Gary from Jacksonville. Glad to hear Edmund's here. I'm sick of carrying the weight on the disclaimer anymore, so it'll be nice to have a break.
True. Yes, we do have a familiar voice back in the virtual studio here for Critical Myths. So very happy to hear from you again, Edmund. It's been a little while, and I'm sure that the listeners are equally happy to know that you are still here.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I've been trying to at least get a few comments in, but it's nice to actually be here in person to deliver them for once.
Yes, exactly. I think that it will at least help people to recognize or believe that I am not just saying that those comments are coming from you. Although they should know that some of those things are clearly not my references. So yes, we will be able to go and do some episodic discussion. Edmund will be here for all the shows this week, which is great. Definitely looking forward to that. And yeah, we're going to start off like we usually do, which is kind of the how was your week type of segment. And well, who wants to jump in first? It's been a little more than a week, Edmund.
It has indeed, but I've been, having made that move from Greenville, back to New York, I've been, settling back into, my old, not my birthplace, but certainly one of the places I consider my hometowns. It's been, quite interesting seeing how, New York has changed. I'm getting used to paying big city movie ticket prices again, not quite the bargain matinees I've been used to, but of course also far more selection and interesting movies and plays and things to see appear in the Big Apple, of course.
Yeah, very good, very good. And Gary, how about you?
Oh, I've had a great week. I went on a cruise for a week, so yeah, life was good. It was rough, and the food was plentiful, and the drinks were free flowing. So, it was hard to complain much. But I had a good time. I did manage to start reading the just about finished. I have about 20 pages left of the second Aftermath Star Wars books, Life Debt. And I do have to say, maybe I'm getting accustomed to Mr. Wendig's writing style at this point, but. It's getting easier and it's starting to read faster. So hopefully by the time I hit the third book, I will breeze right through it. And, it's an interesting dilemma where I enjoy the actual storyline and the information that's being put forth, the concepts, but some of the actual writing does plod and drag a little bit. And it's odd because I do want to read it. And I think some of the sort of plot lines are very imaginative, but just to have to get through the writing to get to them can sometimes be a little bit dragging. So it's a love-hate relationship so far with the series. So.
Yeah, I actually have a copy of that book sitting on my stack that I got recently. I'll just say there's a reason I picked Thrawn instead of that one to start with.
Well, I picked up Thrawn. I also picked up Tarkin. I went on a little splurge there. Oh. But I figured I finished the first Aftermath. I figure I'll read all three and then I'll go back around to Thrawn after that. And like I said, it is starting to read a lot faster, the second book, than the first one was. So it's going along well. But like I said, I like the concepts. I'm not necessarily thrilled with the writing style. So I'll plot through to get the stories.
That's pretty much the issue that I had with even the first one. So I was expecting that would be the case with both the second and third one. Just because, yeah, there's things that are good there, but the writing style kind of just distracts. That's it. I'm about 100 pages into Thrawn, and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, good. I'll have to hurry through to catch up with that. And also, I don't actually show it on our headlines, but I figured I'd just mention it anyway since I'm the resident comic book geek of our group here. All this talk about Marvel with altering superheroes and, why not introduce new characters because, people want the old heroes. Somebody was actually listening. They're introducing a line of comic books called Marvel Legacy, where they are actually bringing back the original superheroes, so to speak. Thor will be back. Peter Parker will, not that he necessarily left, but seems like some of the focus is pulled away from him, will be back. And several other characters along the way, because guess what? They found out that they have hundreds of thousands of fans that still want to read stories about those people. And they're actually going to write stories and sell them. Wow.
What a concept.
Yeah, I know. market has a demand, and they're actually going to say, "Oh, okay," instead of "stick it." which is what a lot of people feel they've been doing in the past year and a half. Not to mention my personal disgust over turning Captain America into a Hydra agent just because people didn't like that Steve Rogers was no longer Captain America. So I'll stop
this
eating that drum.
This could be an entire episode. Topic, I'm just saying.
I'm sorry. It wasn't on the list, and I wanted to...
No, but, I will... Yeah. I'll just say that there are some, perhaps, who feel like the switch with Captain America and his quote-unquote true proclivities or philosophies might actually be might have been foreshadowing. But anyway,
well, I'm not saying that, you know, that there might not be elements that are interesting. But when it was specifically said that it was done on purpose to alienate the fans, because some editors took it to be a thing about race. And where some people were just like, no, we like Steve Rogers to be Captain America. We don't want anybody else. We don't care what color the person is. To us, Captain America is Steve Rogers. And it became very much of a heated sort of racial debate, which surprised the heck out of me. You know, much as we have in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now, Patriot, he was considered to be the Captain America of the 50s because Steve was on ice. So, and, you know, I think even if he became Captain America, people wouldn't have been thrilled either. So, or when Bucky had temporarily become Captain America, people didn't care for that either. And so I didn't understand the animosity from the editorial staff at Marvel. But nevertheless, it was there. So it's interesting that they will start giving some of their fan base what they want to read.
Well, you never know. From what I understand, quality aside, because there are some people who grumble about it, the DC Rebirth titles are just way outselling the Marvel titles right now. And I think that Marvel kind of went down a road, you know, right or wrong, they kind of went down a road to try to change things up. I think they probably went a little too far in that initiative for the existing fan base. And, you know, you take a gamble. Marvel Comics is probably in the best position to do so and to kind of recover from that because, you know, parent company being what it is.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You took a shot. Yeah. It didn't work out. We'll take a little bit of a loss here and then we'll regroup and we'll continue forward. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. I know that there's a lot of controversy about that even still, but I think the problem with a lot of these discussions is that when it's more about the product rather than the content of the product. And that itself is more the problem for Marvel right now, because with DC, when people talk about it, it's decisions story-wise. It's not decisions about editorial. And it's not anymore. It used to be for DC. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you completely ditching everything? But at any rate, no, I'm sure that we'll be talking more about that as time goes on, especially as we see the Marvel movies kind of coming back into the forefront again. I'm sure that's part of it, too. If you completely alter the landscape, and I think we talked about this before, that you completely alter the landscape so that it doesn't resemble the films that are so hugely popular, you are essentially barring entry for the casual fan that may be saying, hey, it's been a while since I picked one of these up. Why don't I go and do that? And considering that they went through so many hoops to try to align the comics with the movies at first, for them to go so far off that message is probably not helping at all either. You can't have a movie where Cap is sitting there and fighting Hydra and taking out Hydra and all that with the Avengers and so forth and Age of Ultron and so on, and have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fighting Hydra yet again, and then have the complete opposite taking place in the comic book. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, for me, you know, Thrawn, I've been reading that. For my comics reading, I can't really speak to the content because I'm, like, way behind. I'm way behind, months behind. What else did I have on my list? So, yeah, this week I didn't go on a cruise, Gary, but Edmund, I was actually kind of, sort of, not really in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah?
One day this week, actually took an excursion into the city, went to the Museum of Natural History.
Yes.
Sorry to report, nothing came to life. We were kind of...
You're supposed to hide overnight, John.
They actually have a big sign there that says overnight stays now. So they're capitalizing big time on that. but we did manage to see everything in to some depth, not stunning depth, but certainly some depth in a matter of a couple hours, especially the exhibits that we were particularly interested in. And then from there, went and hung out a little bit in Central Park, went to the Belvedere Castle Visiting Center, which is kind of right in the center there, which was kind of cool. And then when people realized, oh, hey, it's not as flat as I thought it would be, walking around Central Park started to become less of an option. But, you know, did get to see a bit of that and then hung out down by Times Square for a while and then went even further away from where you are down into NoHo and SoHo. So, which is interesting. I haven't been to some of those spots in a while because I usually wind up hanging out in the, you know, theater district or Chelsea or Hell's Kitchen because it's right there in Midtown. But, yeah, the way that neighborhoods change.
Yeah, that's certainly that's one thing. The work I'm doing now does actually take me all over Manhattan. So I have been able to revisit some of the Tribeca and SoHo, and been rather amazed at certain areas like Lower Broadway, how much has been completely taken over by national chains and name brand stores and shoe stores popping up everywhere. But I'd sort of heard from afar this thing of how retail space was becoming just for the very rich companies, and I'm certainly seeing less and less of those smaller mom and pop stores that used to give the city so much of its character. So that's been a bit of an adjustment. Certainly sort of that Times Square effect has been taking over different parts of the city.
Yeah, in particular when we were shopping down in, like I said, the NoHo and SoHo areas, I noticed in particular that it was a very specific income bracket. Let's put it that way. Higher than what I had anticipated, perhaps.
Sure.
Very fashion forward, skewing younger.
You didn't know I'm
skewing older. One of those. I prefer the first interpretation, always. It was one of those things where it's like, boy, there's a lot of eye candy walking around this area. Yeah. What's going on here? But it's obviously a very trendy area to go. And certainly the prices reflected that. I mean, there were very few, you know. There were actually a couple of the stores that we wanted to go to that, let's put it this way, there wasn't a sign on outside the door. You had to know it was there.
Right.
Or you had no business being there. And it's like, wow, okay. That's not my usual thing, but all right. But yeah, that was a really good day. I mean, it was before the weather turned, so it was, you know, beautiful day in the city. Didn't really have a lot of spare time, so unfortunately didn't have the chance to let you know that I was going to be there, but there we are. This is the time of year, spring forward, where, you know, excursions into the city happen a lot more often. Winter,
absolutely.
Not so much.
Yeah. Completely understandable.
Yes.
And actually, as you guys were talking about books and things, there is actually a book I've gone back to. I've started reading the Chronicles of Thomas Covenant again, starting at the very beginning with Lord Fowl's Bane. It actually came out because of a personal connection, which was there. I mean, it has always been there since I first read it back in when it came out in the early 80s. But my grandfather was actually a Methodist missionary who did contract leprosy when he was on his mission in India, was one of the was lucky enough to be at the hospital in Vellore that pioneered the treatments for leprosy. So he was cured, it's actually been the 50th anniversary of his death, he's actually been recognized finally by the Methodist Church, at the time, even though he was cured, there was still a big stigma about leprosy. So it was something that the church wasn't really ready to embrace at the time. But certainly when I first read the Thomas Covenant Chronicles, which is all about, Thomas Covenant is, has leprosy, it always had that personal connection back to my grandfather. So with his story getting some recognition and back in the news, I started rereading it, and my mother has actually started reading it for the first time, and is finding it very, certainly very, very interesting. And in terms of it's one of the more unusual fantasy epics, with that central character who is so resistant to the idea of being the hero and accepting the power that he has once he transfers to the land, and being very suspicious of it. So it's been an interesting interesting reread, and I'll be interested to take it all the way through to the more recent Last Chronicles, which I actually still have not finished. I'm about halfway. I was about halfway through the third book of the four. So interesting series to go back to and see how I feel about it. God, what is it? 35 years later.
go
ahead, Gary.
I was having this discussion actually with somebody online a few days ago about the person I was speaking with says once they read a book, they never go back. Mm. And I'm not completely disagreeing because, you know, over the years, there's probably been hundreds of books that I have no desire to. But I do admit to having a core probably three, maybe four books that I try to revisit, if not yearly, probably about every, 15 to 16 months and, read through it again. And sometimes I get new things out of them. Sometimes I'm just reminded. But I enjoy going back to a book. Like I said, it's not every book, but, the ones that touch you in some way. And, going back and rereading it again. From what you're sounding like, Edmund, you enjoy the same thing. And I guess I'll post the query to John as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's obviously lots of books that I'm picking up, for the first time. But certainly there are for myself as well those core books that I don't necessarily get to them yearly, but this thing of going back after 5 years or 10 years and it is interesting how what I get out of them does definitely change as I get older and my experience, different experiences, start entering into how I view the books.
Definitely, I think I've mentioned many times before that there's a short list that I do go back to, some more often than others. I think Dune I've read so many times in different times and experiences of my life that I get a little bit something different out of it every single time. I think things like even Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the humor hits a little differently over time. Arthur C. Clarke, like you mentioned, Gary, a couple of his books. Lord of the Rings, I think there's a lot of people that do that one. But, just like I said, I even went through just a couple years ago and reread the entire long saga of Raymond Feist that began with Magician. And I think it's like 20 plus books. And finally did a full reread of that entire saga. And definitely picked up things that weren't there before that, you need to have a certain perspective in order to understand, okay, that's where, you can have a surface understanding, but I think that it does kind of lend itself after a time. Some of these stories, the various perspectives that you kind of need to have at least a little bit of a background in before you can fully appreciate where they're going with some of the character beats and so forth. But I think that going through and reading something once, it's almost like going through and watching a beloved TV series only once. Yeah, okay, you got the story, but, just this year, I mentioned, we did a full rewatch of Twin Peaks, and boy, seeing that again after so many years, it's surprising some of the things that I had forgotten, and some of the things that I remembered so vividly that were way out of context, and that was very interesting to see. And I definitely wanted to mention this to you guys, too. We just recently, in the last couple of weeks, embarked on a rewatch of Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I'll be honest. I've said it before, when you rewatch the first season, especially in light of some of the other revelations that have come out. Okay, yeah, you can definitely pick up on things that you didn't before. But I find that the more that I rewatch the show, there's certain performances that I feel were completely underrated. And
John, if you tell me that you like Byron now, I'm just going to hang up on my phone call. Okay.
No, you can rest assured. But maybe it's because this is the first time I've done an extensive rewatch of the first season since Michael O'Hare passed. But mm-hmm. I really, truly appreciate what he was doing with Sinclair. Of course, again, it is also one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm a few years further down the line now. And maybe I'm picking up on a few other things about, where the actor even was at that point.
Oh, I agree. Sinclair, as being older now than when it first came out, I do get a whole new layer to his performance. I agree. There's a sense of heaviness and loss that I did not appreciate the first few times I watched it.
You know what? That's a really good way of putting it, because I was trying to put my finger on it, but it's the expressions that he gives and the way that he almost pushes through some of that weariness that you said, and I know that there's other factors involved, but it definitely is something that I appreciate a lot more now. And even some of the other performances, I feel like you can feel the weight even on Londo or Jakar. And it just rings so much more true when you have a little bit more of your own life experience to kind of lend to the experience, you know, as the viewer. So, you know, they always say a lot of art, a lot of this stuff is what you bring to it. And I think that's the whole reason why sometimes you do have to go back and rewatch something. You know, just watching a movie when you're, you know, in your teens or whatever else. Let's face it, we all have, you know, talks with people that, you know, something like Babylon 5 or some other things where it's like, oh, yeah, you watch this and they'll give their opinion. And you'll sit there and go, you missed 95% of what was happening. And then sometimes it's just that, yeah, I was watching the story or this and that, and that's cool. And it's like, okay, you're not really, whatever reason, you're not picking up on some of the other nuances that are there, and it's nice to go back and do that. But certainly, thank you for reminding me, because I kind of forgot I was going to mention the Babylon 5 rewatch. We're just towards the end of the first season.
Okay, now I am rewatching it currently as well, not necessarily from the beginning, but I started actually on season 4 on the new Go 90 app that's available.
Yes.
Online, and that's how I've been watching it during, well, I shouldn't say watching, well, I try not to watch it while I'm driving, but I listen to it, and I pretty much know most frames by heart, so there's really not much much to see at this point. However, I am enjoying the I don't know what you call it, a network, a streaming service. I don't even know what the politically correct term is right now for that type of thing, but they've added Fringe, they've added Almost Human. They're really adding some great stuff to this little program, and I don't know, the advertising doesn't seem overly harassing, so I don't mind it, and I just can't imagine how cheap they are getting these episodes that the advertising content is so low.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very grateful, and we've been enjoying it a lot. We're just getting ready to introduce my daughter to Fringe, and I'm anxious. I'm sure, Edmund, you've read about it, and John and I mentioned it briefly in another episode. But yeah, it's a nice little thing. It's nice to have Babylon 5 accessible anytime, anywhere, or at least within reason.
Absolutely. No, I know I haven't been quite aware of that, and certainly happy to see Babylon 5 finally getting out there in a format that these kids nowadays prefer.
Yeah, I will say that's what I've been doing, because right now my first season discs are actually loaned out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been using the Go90 app, and with an Apple TV, it actually streams pretty well. It's not perfect. I can't really, you know, depending on which way that the stupid app wants to work on a given day, I can either do full screen or I can't. On the other hand, sometimes having just a little bit smaller screen helps with the resolution problems. Because, of course, going from the 90s to standard def type stuff to 1080p can be a little messy. But I will say that the story is shining through, because this is the first time through for some of the viewers right now. So some of the things that I considered to be, and what we probably considered to be, like, it's really that episode, it surprises me how fresh eyes can take it.
Mm-hmm.
And accept it, not only accept it, but get into it. The episode that comes to mind is Eyes, where I had somebody sitting there screaming at the television, so angry with the Colonel in that episode.
Oh, and I was like, Van Zane or something.
Yeah, I'm sitting there saying to myself, I can't wait for this episode to be over. This isn't one of the JMS episodes. Can we move on, please? No, I want to see how Sinclair gets out of this. And so that's the other side of it too, is the kind of, also we are as longtime fans, and like I said, it's kind of coming back to an appreciation of O'Hare's performance as Sinclair, but it's seeing somebody completely, you know, new to it, just accepting that this is the character as is, this is the cast, and kind of appreciating it as a new viewer. It's good to see. It's really good to see. But of course, television has changed since then, right? I mean, characters like that are a little more familiar now, and maybe that was another one of those respects in which the show was cutting edge, is that a somewhat tortured character as your quote unquote main character at that time may not have been as easily digested as it would be today, where there's been a lot of other shows hitting the airwaves. as we say all the time, there is way more out there now than there ever was back when we were kind of tadpoles, so to speak. Mm. But yeah, it's just really interesting always to see these things with fresh eyes and so on. So let's see. You know what I'm going to do is kind of change up this list a little bit because we are kind of going taking our time, reminiscing and so on, which is always good. And one of the other things that I saw this week, a little bit further in the list here, is a little movie called Morgan. I'm not going to say that it's a great movie, but it is an interesting concept. Basically, the idea of an AI being kind of, for lack of a better term, injected into a, you know, a baby, so that the AI is in control of the mind as it's, as you know, there's the biological side, which is evolving in its own sense and kind of developing in its own sense, but then the AI is the one that's in control. And, yeah, it kind of plays out the way that you would expect it to if you've seen Ex Machina or anything else. And then there's a really nice little twist at the end, which you could probably have about a 50-50 chance of guessing. I did. Others did not. But it's actually not a bad film. It has a couple familiar faces in it. And I actually thought that some of the character work was pretty well done. So I wouldn't say that it's on the level of some of the other films that we've had high recommendations for, like Arrival or something like that. But for a weekend view, it's not a bad movie to try out. So, let's see. We also have a couple other things here on the list. I guess that this one I found interesting, Gary, perhaps your commentary here. So the new lead for the Star Trek Discovery show is saying that they're going for a rawer, grittier take.
Did they not see Nog's leg get blown off in on Deep Space Nine?
Right.
How grittier-er? Are they aware of the history? Of course I'll say no, because I don't think they are, but yeah, just, you know, pretty much grittier than the Dominion War. I don't know. I want much more grittier than that.
Yeah. I thought it was funny when, if you read the article, that basically it's almost like no one who was remotely involved in the conversation had ever seen Deep Space Nine. The whole Discovery thing, the whole, like, just the way things are parsing out. I'm beginning to wonder if maybe it's a good thing, though, because now the premier show for CBS Access is The Good Fight, the follow-up to The Good Wife, and it's getting really good, high critical praise, and apparently it's also getting good numbers. So maybe that might take a little bit of the pressure off for them, as far as Discovery is concerned, but wow, does it just... Sometimes I read some of these articles and I wonder if anybody thought this stuff through before. I really do. I think they announced things way earlier than they should have. But Gary, how about you? Any new thoughts? Because you certainly had some pretty strong opinions of late.
Who, me?
No.
I'm just concerned. I think they're having a lot of problems with it. Probably the big thing with the change of showrunners, obviously, I feel has impacted the show more than they're telling us or letting on at all. They're not using the word retooling, but they're sure taking enough time to do so. It won't surprise me if we end up with a slightly different show than was originally announced. Not that that's a bad thing, though, because their different announcements were all over the place. There was never really a clear defined thing. I think we were up to two Federation ships and a Klingon ship at one point was going to be, and then they mentioned a space station possibly on top of it. So I never got a clear sense of what the original Fuller idea was. And now that he's, you know, pretty much, you know, hit the dirt, I always got the impression he walked versus got kicked out. So, I don't know what they're going to do. They said that they were going to follow his guide, but who knows? So it's very uncertain. I just figured they'd have a clearer roadmap at this point, now that it was supposed to have been airing for about 4 or 5 months already. So it's disheartening. It's not surprising, though. You know, many people in the fan community have felt that CBS has taken a rather lackluster approach to the franchise and is not imparting upon it the respect that it's due for a franchise that has lasted for over 50 years now. I'm not saying that it can't be changed or new facets introduced, but it just seems that it seems like a general sort of lack of respect. It feels like they're treating it like it's a spec script and they're going to run with it and see what happens. And it's so much more than that. So I could take up a whole show, but I will just stop now.
Edmund, how about you? We haven't heard your opinion about Discovery for quite some time. I'm sure you've been kind of following in your own way.
Yeah, and just feeling quite a bit of dismay that it does seem that the powers that be at CBS just really aren't don't really seem to care about delving into the legacy of Star Trek and having Brian Fuller walk away, and that certainly is the way I interpreted it as well, was a huge red flag that he was just not happy with the direction that he was getting pushed by CBS. So we will have to see, of course, once it actually comes out. But it does feel like they're trying to treat it just like any other show, and not really understanding the unique brand and the unique approach unique necessarily, but certainly very specific approach to world building and the motives of the Federation, et cetera, that really was the heart of the original shows, certainly it seems as we're getting further and further away from in time from Roddenberry and all the people who were put into the show under Roddenberry they're just forgetting what it is that they're actually supposed to be nurturing and continuing.
You mean an optimistic future where humanity works together to better ourselves?
Yes, exactly.
All right. Beyond that, a little bit of another surprising moment here. Not just the fact that Fear the Walking Dead was renewed for a fourth season before the third season even runs. Here we go again, right, Gary? But The X-Files?
Mm-hmm.
Confirmed for a season 11?
Wow, talk about rising from the dead.
Yes. The last time we talked about it, everybody involved was basically saying, screw this, we don't want to even try to do it anymore.
And yeah, we're done, yeah.
Fox basically got what they were asking for, because remember what we were saying before is that basically Fox came out and said, we want a 10 episode season. And everybody basically said, forget it. We don't want to commit. And Gillian Anderson in particular was like, literally everybody else wants me. And why would I go back? And here we are. They committed. They're going to do it. So next year, I guess next summer, they're saying a season 11. I'm stunned to say the least.
Well, it is 10 episodes, so it is hopefully very narrow in scope.
Well, what I'm hoping is that they learn a few lessons from the last time they did it, when the non-Myth Arc episodes were actually pretty good, and then Chris Carter tried to force stuff, and it was just felt like a lead balloon.
Yeah, you don't realize how much it's forced until you try to explain it to someone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that cliffhanger was just egregious.
Yes.
When you don't really know if you're coming back, don't land on a cliffhanger like that.
Yeah.
Edmund, your thoughts on that? I mean, because I remember we talked about it when season 10 was running.
Mm-hmm. Certainly I was quite stunned that they were able to work it out with everybody's schedules. I think the best thing to hope for is learning some lessons from that season 10. Although Chris Carter and the mythology episodes, it does seem to be the ongoing issue with the X-Files. I guess it is just to some extent staying true to the history, kind of as we were just talking about with Star Trek, Maybe it's just something we need to accept that this is the way it's going to be with this show.
Yeah, it may just be that it is what it is, and it's never really going to change.
Well, it really is a niche show, and I from what I remember reading, it's not like it picked up a huge audience with this new season. It's definitely a fan tribute kind of thing. It's not dragging in new people by any means. So, it's I want to say fan service, but I don't mean it. That comes across as so disrespectful. But I guess they feel there's enough of an audience to that wants to see those 10 more episodes. I know I'm not in that camp, but my daughter actually is. She's did a whole rewatch and she was thrilled to hear this news. And I said, really? She said, yes. So maybe we're not the audience anymore.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, I'm being critical, but at the same time, my initial reaction was cool. Then I thought to myself, wait, I had issues with season 10. It's kind of like the way that I felt about 24 Legacy, because I remembered, oh, last time was actually pretty good. I'm kind of looking forward to to another go. Didn't quite work out the way that I had hoped, but there we are. All of these revivals, I think, you know, certainly I've talked enough about, you know, Twin Peaks, the excitement that's there, you know, and there's other shows that are doing similar things. But it's whether or not you are banking entirely upon nostalgia or you actually have something new or interesting to say, right? And I think that Carter is banking a lot on the nostalgia factor. When it comes to, oh, really, they loved being, you know, tortured with double and triple meaning all the time and just throwing everything at the screen and seeing what sticks. So I'm just surprised that they pulled it off, because there was such a negative vibe coming from everybody involved that for them to announce that was just out of left field. And now, similarly, the whole idea that they're going to try to go for a Wheel of Time TV series again. Because the last time they tried that, it was a pilot that aired at like 3 in the morning. Yes. Nobody watched it. When you did find it, you wished you hadn't. And now it's actually seems like it's happening. And the funny part is that they're going to be involving the exact same production company that tried to rush out that kind of $5 pilot that they made before. So, yeah. Interesting that all these things are kind of coming out of the woodwork. Let's see. We had a couple other things on here, but I don't know, Gary, if you have anything to say about Lock and Key. There's another one that came and kind of got resurrected out of nowhere, and I guess Hulu's going to make it.
Yeah, because that's been bandied about a few times, and we'll see. Some of Hulu's pilots are interesting, and I do have to say that I feel they give them enough resources to give them a fair shake, so I will try and be optimistic.
Yeah, I optimistic is the way that I think is best, is the best way to put it. And finally, for at least right now, and I actually mostly brought this up because I'm interested, Edmund, in your thoughts on the project, but we do have a little bit of casting news. Oh, didn't everybody miss that? I missed that. So yeah, Steve Buscemi is coming to this whole Philip K. Dick Electric Dreams anthology series on Amazon. And yes. Yeah, there's been some other high-profile casting for this. But Edmund, as we kind of wrap up this particular episode, your thoughts on this project?
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. Not just the casting, but the fact that, Bryan Cranston, producing and, along with Ronald D. Moore, this really feels like it could be a Twilight Zone type show for our time, and certainly a rare case of somebody taking Philip K. Dick material and really doing it more in the true style of the original stories, rather than the various of the adaptations which really been turning it more into more conventional action fare like Total Recall and that sort of thing. So I'm quite intrigued to see what they come up with, and as I say, just fingers crossed that this is Philip K. Dick on the page finally getting translated to the screen.
It should be a fairly interesting collection. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
All right, well, I think what we're going to do is go ahead and wrap this particular episode up, and then when we come back next time, there's been some high-profile films that have come out in the last month or two, and we might pick Edmund's brain about those.
Ooh, yes, pick it.
Yes. I've actually rewatched at least one of the movies on the list, so... I'm looking forward to the discussion as well. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.